ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। टुडे वी रीड फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम फोर्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 25 टेक्स्ट नंबर 37।
इमां त्वं अदितिष्ठस्व पुरीं नवमुखीं विभो मयोपनीतान् गृणानां कामभोगान् शतां शमः। इमां त्वं अदितिष्ठस्व पुरीं नवमुखीं विभो मयोपनीतान् गृणानां कामभोगान् शतां शमः। इमां त्वं अदितिष्ठस्व पुरीं नवमुखीं विभो मयोपनीतान् गृणानां कामभोगान् शतां शमः।
Imam, this, Twam, your good self, Adishtishtasva, just remain, Purim, in the city, Navamukim, with nine gates, Vibho, O my Lord, Maya, by me, Upanitan, arranged, Grinnanha, taking, Kama Bhogan, the materials for sense gratification. Shatam, 100. Sama, years. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. My Lord, my dear Lord, I have just arranged this city of nine gates for you, so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years, and everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. Please repeat. My dear Lord, I have just arranged this city of nine gates for you, so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years, and everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Dharmartha Kama Mokshana Dara Samprapti Het Dava. The wife is the cause of all kinds of success in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately salvation. When one accepts a wife, it is being understood that he is being helped in his progressive march toward liberation. In the beginning of life, a person is trained as a brahmachari, and is then allowed to marry a suitable girl and become a householder. If one is thoroughly trained in household life, he finds all facilities for human life: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Everything is there if it is executed according to the regulative principles. Imam tuang aditishtasva purim navamukim vibho mayopanitan grinana kama bhogan shatasamaha. My dear Lord, I have just arranged the city of nine gates for you, so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years, and everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. Before I begin speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam, I'd like to ask for the permission and blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, especially the God brothers and God sisters of my spiritual master. I hope I don't breach the etiquette by speaking before you, because you're far more full of realizations than I am. But I'm just going to present this for my purification and for your inspiration. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjala Shalakaya Chakshuram Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Pancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyedacha Patitanam Pavinibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you look at this verse, I'm going to read it again, and purport, it's a little misleading. The verse says, my dear Lord, I have just arranged this city of nine gates for you, so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years, and everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. So at first glance, it seems to be a very warm invitation to enjoy innocently. But this verse should be seen in context. You see that in the analogy given by Narada Muni to Maharaj Prachini Barishad, the analogous example of Puranjan is used. Puranjan is meant to represent the living entity who is living in a city of nine gates. And previous to this verse, many descriptions are given of what that city is like. And particularly at this part of the description, we are looking at intelligence. Intelligence is represented here in the form of a woman. The verses preceding this explain the various allurements and wonderful arrangements which can be created by a woman to make some pleasant environment for a man to enjoy his senses. However, if this path suggested by the woman is followed, in this case by Puranja, he will be going or proceeding on the path called Pravritti Marg. Pravritti Marg is the path of sense gratification. In opposition to that is the Nivritti Marg, which is the path of transcendence, and minimizing opportunities and experiences of sense gratification. You will see in forthcoming verses that this woman who represents the intelligence is condemning those who follow this path of transcendence and say, they are missing out on such wonderful sense enjoyment. But you, dear Puranjan, are so intelligent. You have seen the light and therefore you want to enjoy with me. So you have made a very wise choice. However, we need to analyze what will be the outcome of this sense gratification. The outcome of this uncontrolled, incessant sense gratification is going to be entanglement. And because he is being guided by lusty intelligence, material intelligence, his decisions, if he follows it, this intelligence will be incorrect. So, in his comment to Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, text 41, His Grace Gaurijan Prabhu speaks about lust. The verse preceding that, chapter 3, text 40, is explaining that intelligence, mind, and the senses are the repositories of lust. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, explains in that purport, 340 of Bhagavad Gita, that the enemy's hiding places have been identified. And in a war, it's not like you wait for the enemy to come to attack you, because you'll lose your life, if not ultimately the battle, but at least your life. So the thing to do is to seek out the enemy. And Krishna, by his mercy, has identified three places where lust resides: mind, intelligence, and senses. Prabhupada says that these are the repositories of lust. In the purport of chapter 3, text 41, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the mind is like a repository for all the thoughts that come filtering in through the senses. And therefore, lusty thoughts come in there and the mind becomes affected. Once the mind is affected, intelligence, which is the next door neighbor of the mind, also becomes affected. Gaurijan Prabhu comments that if one is meant to get guidance from the intelligence, which acts like a sort of guard, like a protector, a guardian, and that guardian is affected by the enemy camp, he's been captivated by the enemy camp, which means you've got an enemy in your own camp, who's meant to be your friend, who's meant to be your guide, then the situation is very dangerous. I'll read to you from Surrender Unto Me. Gaurijan Prabhu says, while controlling our senses, however, we should not neglect our intelligence. The intelligence, like a guard, is the next door neighbor of the soul, and its business is to protect us from Maya. If the guard has been corrupted by lust, however, the situation is as dangerous as when a bodyguard is bribed by the enemy. Thus, the materially contaminated intelligence works in the service of our enemy, and it should be neglected. We should instead accept the intelligence of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Yes, these three methods are always available to us to confirm what is right and what is wrong. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So if we're in doubt of what the intelligence is dictating, we may consult senior Vaishnavas, our spiritual master, and Shastra. Also, we may fall prey to the false guru of the mind. In his analysis of the different demons of Vrindavan, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares the mind to Putana, a pseudo-guru. Pseudo-guru because he's false. He can never afford you any worthy advice. And the advice that he gives you is like administering poison to you. So you may be drinking very nicely, thinking you're getting fed, but you're drinking poison. So in this way, we should be very careful to discriminate who is guru and who is not. Just last week, in the Mayapur Institute's presentation of the Bhakti Vaibhava, We are on the unit 10, which is describing Kardamba's meeting and association with Devahuti. Just to give you a summary of this, Devahuti is the most exalted and qualified daughter of Swayambhuva Mani. In all ways she is qualified. Therefore she is presented to Kardama Muni, who is a direct son of Brahma. And the Lord himself comes in reciprocation of Kardama Muni's prayers. And when he sees that Kardama Muni is performing austerities for 10,000 years, but the purpose of the austerity is to serve the instruction of Brahma, it's not that he wants to enjoy sense gratification, he wants to serve the order of his guru, his father, the Lord is moved. He is moved to the extent that he sheds a tear. This tear becomes the Bindu Sarovar, a lake. The Lord then speaks to Kardama Muni, saying that in a few days from now, just the day after tomorrow, a very good proposal will come your way. It will be Swayambhuva Mani and his qualified daughter. And then you should accept this proposal. This is the girl you've been waiting for all these long years. So in this way, Kardama Muni, accepting the advice of the Lord, accepts the hand when the proposal comes in 2 days' time. Devahuti was not unknown. Kardama Muni was not unknown to Devahuti. Because previous to this exchange, this meeting, she had been told about the glories of Kardama Muni by another Muni, Narada Muni. He had visited the palace and explained about the glories of Narada Muni, of Kardama Muni. And then her mind had been captivated by his wonderful qualities. When Kardama Muni first met Devahuti, he explained that he is willing to accept this proposal on condition that once she has children, he will take to the renounced order of life, sannyas. And then he fell back into meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord. It is described that Devahuti's mind was captivated by this, that this person is so strict in his vows of austerity and self-realization that even though engaging in this sense gratification process of entering Grihastha Ashram, his mind is focused still. Once married, Devahuti serves Kardama Muni very sincerely. In fact, to the extent that she neglects her personal beauty and her body. Kardama Muni is very impressed by this. He says that the general tendency for living entities is to take care of the body, especially the fair sex. But I see you have neglected your body just to serve me. Therefore, I award you all the benefits of all the austerities and penances and tapasyas that I have done. And then he shows how to use them. He shares his spiritual assets. Devahuti is moved by this and replies in a choked voice, "Thank you, my Lord, for considering this. But I would like to remind you," in a very humble way she's speaking, "I would like to remind you of the promise that you made. You promised me at some stage that you will give me children. So I wish to have children." Immediately, out of his mystic potency, Kardama Muni created an aerial mansion, 7 stories high, fully bedecked with all possible facilities, with hundreds and thousands of maidservants at the beck and call of Devahuti. Devahuti looked up at the palace and looked at her clothes, which were dirty, and a body which was caked with dirt for neglect, and a matted hair, and she felt out of place, that how could I go into such a palace? Kardama Muni understood her mind, ordered her to go into the Bindu Sarovar Lake. And in this Bindu Sarovar Lake, she had a transcendental makeover. And then he placed her on this airplane. And in this airplane, they traveled for many, many years. And in these years, Kardama Muni took Devahuti to many exotic, transcendental and beautiful places, which aroused the sensual desire, potency within Devahuti. And They enjoyed conjugal affairs for many, many years. Then, after traveling, he returned in the palace back to his home, and he divided himself into nine. And in those nine forms, he impregnated Devahuti with nine discharges of semen. From those discharges, nine beautiful daughters were born. But still, at this point in the Bhagavatam, chapter 23 of Canto 3, Devahuti is lamenting. Why? She's got the husband of her choice. She's enjoyed as much sense gratification as she can digest, maybe more. She's been here, done that, got the t-shirt. She's had the nine daughters, the children that she wanted. Still, she's lamenting. Kyano? Because she says she has wasted her valuable time on sense gratification. She had with her the saintly association of a Paramahansa, although he was in Vyasta Ashram, but she chose to enjoy sense gratification instead. And she laments. The exact words she uses in Bhagavatam: it seems that I have been solidly cheated by the illusory energy. She's feeling so much remorse. What have I done? I mentioned in the Bhagavad Bhakti Vaibhav class that sometimes people join Krishna consciousness later in life. You may know such people. Maybe in their 30s or 40s even. And they always lament, if only I'd met this devotees a few years before, how different my life would have been. It's a very important point. But there's no need to lament, because in the purport of chapter 3, text 41, Prabhupada mentions about the urgency. He says that one can begin curbing this lustful tendencies from the very beginning, which means born into Krishna consciousness, or at the moment of understanding the urgency. So some people at the age of 30, 40, they understand the urgency of developing self-realization, and they take to Krishna consciousness, and they may perfect their lives. But Devahuti here is lamenting. So what's the conclusion? Although Devahuti had all facilities for sense gratification, all the facilities a woman could possibly imagine, and she was taken care of by Kadama Muni completely under the rules and regulations, this is an important point, still she had not received instruction about the ultimate goal of life. And she regretted that. So what did she do as a consequence? She said, my dear husband, you've given me so much, but you have not given me fearlessness. Who's meant to give fearlessness to somebody? A guru, a teacher, a parent, father, husband. They are meant to deliver the dependent and give them fearlessness. So unless one is able to give that dependent, be it your disciple, your student, your son, your wife, yes, liberation by giving them fearlessness, one should not take that position. It's a very grave and great responsibility. So, devotee is saying, you're about to leave. Fair enough, you're leaving me with nine daughters, but all these nine daughters will get married soon and leave me alone. Then what? What is my fate? At least leave some representative of you so he can instruct me. So he says that the father lives on through his son. And as long as a woman whose husband has passed away has a grown son, she is not to be considered a widow. So in this case, none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Dev, Kapila Muni, appeared as the son of Devahuti. Upon hearing the succinct and very instructive guidelines given by Kapila Muni, Devahuti herself attains perfection. So we see by Kadama Muni, who then took to the renounced order, sannyas, and wandered around as a traveling mendicant, he attained perfection of his life. And Devahuti, by being a chaste wife and getting a qualified husband and a qualified son, she also perfected her life. So how does all of these things feature in our lives as devotees of Krishna? This verse, this purport here, Prabhupada is speaking about eating, sleeping, mating and defending, and everything is there if executed according to the regulated principles. We are following principles, rules and regulations. If we do this, is the ultimate goal that we're going to get facilities for eating, sleeping, mating and defending? Is that the goal of life? No. But we will answer that in a few minutes. We can take a look at another example from this pastime. And this is of Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu was the emperor who was given the instruction by Lord Brahma to populate the world. Lord Brahma had given that instruction to the four Kumars, but they had rejected that instruction, choosing instead to be celibate for the rest of their lives. They thought that Grihastha Ashram would be a distraction. However, when Swayambhuva Manu appeared with his wife Satarupa, his first question to Lord Brahma was, how can I serve you? You are my father, you are my guru. Brahma was very pleased. Especially in hindsight of how the Kumaras had rejected his order. When the Kumaras had rejected his proposal, Brahma was very angry. In fact, from his forehead came a very angry figure, Rudra, Lord Shiva, was produced. But when Swayambhuva Manu responded in this way, humbly, he was praised by Lord Brahma and he got the blessings of Lord Brahma. So what happens if one gets the blessings of the spiritual master? Let's have a look at Swayambhuva Manu's life. Swayambhuva Manu lived for a very long time. Now you may think, perhaps 100 years. Oh, he was a great yogi. Perhaps 200 years or 500 years. Swayambhuva Manu lived for 71 kalpas. And if you do the maths, I did the maths, 306,780,000 years. Quite a life. In that time, he was acting as a Rajarishi, not only as a king, but a saintly king, who was living his life and conducting the reigning of his subjects under the principles of religion. Such a king is the earthly representative of Krishna, of God. But his life was exemplary because he lived in great opulence, but still he didn't lose sight of the goal of life, which we'll discuss shortly. So it's described, after giving the hand of his daughter to Kardamba Muni, he returned to his kingdom. And in his kingdom, he immediately sat down and performed Vedic sacrifices, because he was instructed to do so by Lord Brahma. And he maintained the Krishna conscious atmosphere. Actually, it's described that the kingdom of Swayambhuva Manu was free from the threefold miseries of life, which is sufferings, the klesha, sufferings caused by other living entities, suffering caused by one's own mind and body, and suffering caused by the demigods in charge of weather, etc. Why is Swayambhuva Manu's life a success? Because amidst all that opulence, he didn't lose the goal. Prabhupada says here in the purport of chapter 22, text 34, Krishna consciousness does not stop them in their propensity for material enjoyment, but simply regulates their habits in the life of sense enjoyment. In spite of their enjoying the material advantages, they can be liberated in this very life by practicing Krishna consciousness by the simple method of chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Interesting to note here that both Kardamba and Swayambhuva Manu perfected their lives. Swayambhuva Manu perfected his life by enjoying so-called enjoying material opulences within the refinements or constrictions of Krishna consciousness. And Kardamba Muni perfected his life by renouncing all facilities. But both of them achieved success. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning about success which the wife helps with. What is that? Religion, economic development and sense gratification. and ultimately since salvation, which means liberation. However, this is not the ultimate goal of life. If one engages simply in these activities, which is done by cats and dogs, animals, then one is falling short of fulfilling the goal of human life. There needs to be an attempt to engage in more inquiry about the Absolute Truth. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Prema Pumartha Mohan, the fifth Purusha. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the nice verse I'll read to you. Krishna Vishayaka Prema Parama Purushata Yara Agatri Natulya Chari Purushata. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation are known as the four goals of life. But before love of God, the fifth and highest goal, these appear as insignificant as straws in the street. So when one has a valuable gem of Krishna consciousness, everything else looks like broken pieces of glass, as explained in the pastime with Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, while chanting the holy name of the Lord, one should not desire the material advancements represented by religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation from the material world. What does it mean? This is talking about the tenth offense. In the chanting of the holy names, there's 10 offenses to be avoided. And the 10th offense is to still hold on to material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So if one is holding on to one's idea of sense gratification via following the four paths, which is dharma, karma, artha, moksha, then one is actually committing offense when chanting. Because what is the goal of our chanting? One wants to be freed from this cycle of birth and death, which can only be awarded by following Bhagavad Dharma. There's two types of Bhagavad, the person Bhagavad and the person and the book Bhagavad. In the book Bhagavad, in the very second verse, cheating religious systems are cast aside, discarded, because Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest path, which is cultivating one's dormant love of Krishna. Dharman Paricharya. So if one is able to cultivate this relationship, then the artificial creation of a so-called temporary happiness and comfort will be nullified. Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita is considering that his performance of religious duties, his dharma, is higher than following the orders of Krishna. But that sort of attachment to dharma is actually Arjuna's maya. Why? Because it wasn't pleasing to Krishna. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, there's a very beautiful verse. Anya bhilasita sunyam jnana karmani anavitam anukulina krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttamam. Srila Rupa Goswami says, anukulina krishnanu, devotional service must be pleasing to Lord Krishna. So Arjuna was engaged in social devotional service, acting as a righteous warrior, family man. But he wanted to satisfy his own senses by being non-violent. Prabhupada says in the purport to 232, to become non-violent on a battlefield for a warrior is a philosophy of fools. And what is the first thing that Krishna told Arjuna after he accepted Krishna as a spiritual master? Huh? Fool, you think you have this body, but only fools lament for their body. Then Arjuna submitted to the will of the Lord and he fought. Karishyata vaham vache, I'll do whatever you say. So I conclude with these 2 points. And that is, under the shelter of the divine energy, Devi, Devi Prakritam Ashrita, we are safe. It's the safest position. It's the only safe position in this material world, under the protection of the divine energy. And it's not like we have to do something extraordinary to be under the protection of the divine energy. We simply follow these four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds a day, associate with the Vaishnavas, and try and serve the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he will reciprocate by giving us shelter, the only shelter. You may wonder, am I in the shelter? It's very easy to test. You can test that moment or that time when you were in doubt about the process of Krishna consciousness, your chanting was bad, you're causing offenses, you're not inspired to come to see the deity. If you've ever been through such an experience, a patch in your life, you understand what I'm talking about. So this is called being out of the shelter of the divine energy. And when that happens, it's really abominable. It's a gross type of suffering to be out of the shelter of the association with Vaishnavas and to be out of the shelter of the divine energy. When one is properly fixed up in Krishna consciousness, chanting regularly, more than 16 rounds a day, because Srila Prabhupada said chant 16 rounds minimum on our beats. And if one is associating in proper ways with the devotees, loving exchanges and not causing offenses, and when one is trying to serve the Dham as much as possible, then one will experience a great satisfaction. Nothing compares to this satisfaction in the world. You may find some satisfaction, temporary satisfaction I may add, in material enjoyment. That's the hook, that's the bait on the hook. That little gloss, the little embellishment which attracts us to enjoy in this world. But very soon we find the hook and we suffer. But spiritual enjoyment is unlimited. The depth of the ocean of the holy name is unlimited. There's no extent to you can say, I've tasted as much as I can from the holy name. There's no much more I can experience. It's unlimited. And it doesn't become stale. In the lifetime of Swami Bhava Manu that I mentioned towards the end of that narration, text 57 of chapter 22, Prabhupada says in the purport that spiritual life doesn't become stale. If you leave food for over 3 hours, it becomes stale, tasteless. But in the same way, the body, after time when it degenerates, becomes old, it also becomes weak, invalid, nearing to the point, getting near to the point of uselessness. So Krishna consciousness is not like that. Krishna is Navayoganamsha. Therefore, because Krishna is his name is always ever fresh. There's never a point you'll say, oh, I'm so bored of this name, give me another mantra. That comes from a lack of taste, and the lack of taste comes from offenses. So you should very carefully avoid offenses. When I was starting off in Krishna consciousness, a devotee said to me, any difficulty you have in life can be traced back to improper chanting. It's a very deep point. And if you analyze whatever successful day you may have had in your Krishna conscious life thus far, you'll see that morning, in fact throughout the day, you've chanted very nicely. You've tried to attend, you've been awake, that helps. And it also, you've heard the name. Because many times people chant 16 rounds. Of what? 16 rounds of clearly pronounced Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. In a prayerful mood, meditating on the need for you to have shelter of the name. The divine energy is the holy name. The holy name is the divine energy. And taking shelter of the holy name is the only shelter in this Kali Yuga. Kalo naste vanaste vanaste vakatir anyatna. It's no other way. There's no other way, no other way. Any attempt we make to find shelter in something else is doomed for failure, is destined for failure. But we are very determined to try at all costs. No, I'll take shelter of this, I'll take shelter of this. But all these experiences and failures in taking shelter of those things is actually Krishna's mercy. When the shortcomings of those things are revealed, we turn to the holy name again. Then some or the other will lose taste and lose faith. We go back to those things. And we get lashed again. And we take shelter again of the holy name. Till the time we are convinced there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way, we'll have to continue being bashed and slashed by the material energy. So, thank you very much. If there's any questions or comments, please, there's a microphone here. If I've said anything incorrect, please correct me so I can improve myself. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Patita Pavan Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhakti Vrinda ki, Gaura Premanandini.